Daniel Sperry from Around the Foghorn joins me to talk everything Giants. Buster Posey, Joey Bart, Heliot Ramos. Here we go.
Welcome to Painting Corners, your weekly podcast for all things baseball. Now, here are your hosts, Austin Hartsfield and Dave Kwiatkowski.
So we're going to start at catcher, obviously. You have the best catcher of his generation. It's not even close, in my opinion. Buster Posey is phenomenal. I mean, he's coming off of surgery, though, so kind of what's the idea around Buster?
I'm hoping Buster Posey is just what we kind of expect from him. I mean, we expect a high average. If the power numbers come back, awesome. I think that's probably the biggest things that everyone's going to look for, is whether or not the power numbers come back. Because actually, you know, at the plate, you know, last year, as I pull up numbers on the fly here, Posey was still, I mean, he was on base, a high on base percentage, high batting average as usual, but it was not the normal power numbers we'd seen from him. I mean, if Gorkys Hernandez at one point, you know, was outpacing him significantly with slugging percentage, and I think still did. So, obviously we knew something was wrong last year once we saw how down the power numbers were around the All-Star break. And then we finally started hearing more about what was going on with his hip and how that was playing out. For the Giants, I mean, it's not for them to even be 500. I mean, it helps that Posey's back. We're not sitting here looking at a World Series run. So I think the number one thing is that, like, allowing Posey to, like, take his time to get back to being himself. Because, you know, five homers in 105 games is not what we would have expected from Posey. It's funny, a lot of Giants fans love to go with, he's got 20 homer power, and he does, probably in a different ballpark, but he's never actually hit 20 homers. So I think, you know, kind of asking him to, oh yeah, he's going to hit 20 homers next year, is a little bit above what we could really expect. But what I would like to see from Posey is, you know, at least 10 or 12 homers, a lot more doubles. I think that was the biggest thing, is just the extra base hits weren't coming. It was a lot of, you know, he'd make contact and he'd push it through the middle, or he'd push it through the gap in the infield. And that's fine. But not when you're expecting Posey to be your number three or four hitter. At times they kind of toyed with him in the lineup card, playing him a little bit higher because he wasn't your typical three or four hitter, what we've come to expect from him there. To see those power numbers start to creep up again, more doubles, a little bit more homers, you know, I think that's probably going to be what we'd like to see from Buster. That's the biggest thing. I think Posey's huge just for being behind the plate. So I'm not as much worried about his bat being back there. What he does, you know, you ask those pitchers, what it's like working with Buster Posey. I mean, every single one of them understands the benefits that they gain from working alongside Buster, and, you know, to get him back behind the plate and have him healthy and consistent is probably just the number one thing. And then once that bat starts to come around, I think that's, we'll see what to expect from Buster, but there's a lot of fans that are like, oh man, he's going to get his power back, he's going to hit 20 homers. And I'm like, I just can't see it. Yeah,
you talk about Buster having an off year last year. He's still number one amongst catchers in average OBP, weighted runs created. He's top three in defensive runs saved, and is number one in WAR amongst catchers.
Now, mind you, those stats are over the past 3 years, but still.
That just shows you how great Buster is.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's the hard part, is that he was still good last year. The power was just not there. I mean, you can go down his career line and look at his slugging percentage there. Every single number is kind of on par with what you would expect from Buster Posey. The average, the defensive numbers, the defensive metrics, the on-base percentage, all of that. But that slugging percentage, down to a .382 last year. I mean, almost an 80-point dip. Obviously, the hip was bothering him. It'll be, you know, the hip, as long as it's fixed and as long as he's rehabbed it right, you know, he's going to still be very, very good. I think it's a matter of, is he like rookie of the year Buster Posey? Is he 2012 Buster Posey, MVP Posey? Like, I don't know about that. if I mean, heck, if he gets back to even 2014 Buster Posey, I'd be real happy. So, you know, I think that's one of those things that Giants fans, I hope they, you know, I hope they do temper the expectations a little bit, just understanding that he's barely going to be getting close to 100% ready to come back by the time, you know, he has to start his preseason stuff a little, or his spring training and stuff like that a little bit later than the rest. So he won't be, you know, full ready to go on opening day. But, you know, I think we're going to see what you would expect from Buster Posey as long as everything goes well.
Before we get to the number one catching prospect in baseball, I mean, because Joey's a monster. Let's talk about the guy who's probably going to catch these games if Buster isn't. Kind of tell me a little bit more about Aramis Garcia.
Aramis is an interesting prospect. I think, you know, last year, a lot of people go and you can look at the numbers of what he did when he first came up and when he came up or was that, yeah, that was his first appearances with the team. You know, he can play a little bit of first base. They played him there mainly out of necessity, but he hit four homers. He hit .286 and an 800 slug OPS. I mean, it kind of was unexpected for a guy who his bat hadn't necessarily been his big tool. He's a, you know, 65 plate appearances last year, you know, thanks to the September call-up. You know, at the end when it was just him and Hundley, you know, you kind of saw him a little bit more. And especially towards the end of the year, he just played better than Hundley did. I really think Garcia's destiny is going to be a serviceable backup. I don't know if he'll ever be a number one catcher. You know, he might out of, you know, some team's current roster situation, but you know, he's going to be a solid defensive catcher. He's not going to lose you any games with his defense behind the plate. You know, his bat's not going to hurt you being in the everyday lineup or being in the lineup, you know, every third or fourth day. You know, if he's giving Posey a rest or, you know, I had mentioned it before we recorded him, but, you know, I actually think if the Giants are looking to do some type of like, you know, contract dump at the end of the, at some point this offseason or at the beginning of next season or the beginning of this season, you know, I think Aramis might be a kind of guy to package in there just because he is expendable thanks to Joey Bart. And he is a nice piece and he is pretty much MLB ready. I mean, you can't, there's no point in playing him in AAA anymore. You know, you kind of know what you're going to get from him there. So it's, does he do it at the big league level? I think there's a few teams that could use a catcher, a solid backup that they can kind of develop. And maybe he does have the ability to be a number one catcher on the roster, you know, every point, but I'm not sure I see it yet, but you know, he's an interesting thing. If the Giants went into the season with him as their backup, I wouldn't really have a problem with that.
Let's transition into the prospect profile. Kind of give me your perspective on Joey Bart. What is Joey Bart? I mean, he's, in my opinion, the reason that I think people should go to college for baseball if you have the opportunity. I mean, drafted in the 27th round by the Rays. Kind of affected a little bit by the fact that he did commit to Georgia Tech prior. But, I mean, goes to Georgia Tech, you know, cleans up defensively. In a league where catchers are a premium, he seems like the closest thing prospect-wise to a sure thing that there is.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of that is why the Giants picked him. And they've always tended to do that, is they will pick the most sure thing that they can find, especially when they have higher picks. You know, they're not a team that's going to sit there and buy into the high projections, you know, that maybe take a lot of work. A guy who's got a booming arm but needs significant mechanical overhaul to even sustain that arm another 3 or 4 years, you know, they've never done that. It's always been the guy who has the highest ceiling with you know, with the lowest or with the highest floor possible. And I think Joey Bart was that guy. And you've seen a lot of it. And if you've paid attention to, you know, the short season, A-ball, the Northwest League, I mean, he absolutely tore it up, led the league in slugging there, had a high OPS, 983 there, you know, hit a ton of monster homers. You know, the average is there and the hitting tool is there. But, you know, if it ends up being, you know, I'm just looking at MLB Pipeline's, you know, grades right now, and they have him as a 50 and a 55 for hit and power. And I think that's kind of interesting, is that, you know, really, even if his hitting game is heck remotely close to, I'm trying to think, the name is escaping me, but goodness, but I'm trying, you know, thinking good hitting catchers, if it's remotely close like to Mejia? JT,
or what are we talking?
Yeah, a little bit. I was thinking Real Muto. I was also thinking, goodness, who did the Phillies just sign?
A catcher? Ramos.
Yeah, Ramos. It kind of reminds me of that, but the thing is, the defensive aspect of what he does is so crucial and is so incredible, because he was already calling games at Georgia Tech. You know, so he doesn't have to learn that at the minor league level. He understands how to call games. It was interesting. I had a talk with another Giants draft pick. I did an interview with him last year, kind of in the fall. And he actually played with Joey Bart in the Cape Cod League. And I asked him, I was like, what's it like, you know, you throw to your guy that you throw to, have thrown to for the last 4 years, and then you throw to Joey Bart. You did it in Cape Cod League. You did it in, you know, you've done it now for Salem Kaiser. And he said he did not, like, he almost, like, interrupted me to, like, say how good it feels as a pitcher to throw to Joey Bart, because defensively he just gets everything. He's got you, he's got runners all the time because his arm is really strong, and his ability to call the game. He said he's a really good receiver of the ball. He makes it easy for, he said he felt it makes it easier on him to throw the ball as a pitcher and to hit his spots. And you know, Matt Frisby is the guy I was talking about, and he had a heck of a time with Salem Kaiser as well as a pitcher, and kind of opened some eyes there as maybe a future, you know, late inning guy in the bullpen. And so, you know, Joey, you know, everyone likes to talk about the power and, you know, what they've seen, and, oh, wow, you know, this is the best, you know, one of the best all around catching prospects we've seen in a really long time. And, you know, the defensive aspect of it is so high up that I think, you know, it's hard to, like, I wouldn't consider him yet for 2019. But if he shoots through the minor leagues, there's an easy talk of him being in at 2020. You know, the Giants, if they feel they're ready to go, they'll move him fast. And they've talked about that internally, and that's kind of made its way out through a lot of the main beat writers that, you know, if he's killing it, like, they're not going to be afraid to move him because they think he's pretty close to being, you know, a double or triple A kind of a guy. So Bart's going to be a whole lot of fun to watch as he comes up, you know, through the system. You know, I think his physical frame too is a little bit better than Posey for, like, the longevity of being a catcher. Posey's incredible and is stupid athletic, but he's a little bit smaller. You know, the I think the weight and height and just the frame, overall frame of Joey Bart, I think will benefit him and maybe even give him a longer career behind the dish than Posey will end up having. But, you know, Bart's a whole, I mean, the Giants' top 2-3 prospects really have a lot of people excited about him. So it's really nice to have Joey Bart at the forefront of it.
So we're going to first base, and we're going to talk about Brandon Belt. Brandon Belt hasn't been able to stay particularly. There have been more knicky-knack injuries than anything else at first base. He's played 112 and 104 prior before that, playing 156 and 137 games in a season. Didn't have a great year last year. And, of course, he's got this contract that, you know, I mean, it isn't great for how much you're paying him to be the first baseman that he is. I mean, $16 million over the next $16 million a year for the next 3 years until 2021. Brandon Belt's obviously going to be the first baseman. Is there a future behind Brandon, and kind of what's your thoughts on Brandon Belt as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, if there is a future behind him, it's either Chris Shaw or it's who doesn't look entirely he doesn't look totally out of place in the outfield, and they kind of moved him out there because they felt like they had you know, with Belt being around in the contract, that if Shaw moving quickly, they felt the outfield was probably the best spot for him to work out of. You know, you have Ryder Jones, who can play either he's a corner infielder, patented, you know, he can play third or first. Pablo Sandoval can play, you know, first and third as well. But Belt is, you know, Giants Twitter has a fun time talking about are hashtag belt wars, and those kind of go crazy. You know, people Belt is a polarizing figure amongst the Giants fan base because there's a lot of us that see the potential. They see the on base percentage, they see what he does in the box, they see his power. The problem is, you know, you'd say that Nicky, you talked about it, Nicky neck injuries. I mean, I don't know how many times he's been knocked out because of a concussion, or you know, and almost every single injury of he is seems to be a freak injury. You know, it's not a weightlifting injury. It's not a, you know, I have a muscle strain because I didn't take care of my body right or something like that. It's like, oh, hey, Marco Scudero was screwing around in infield warmups and pegged me in the head with a ball, and now I'm out for a month because of this concussion, these lingering concussion symptoms. I mean, that's what it's been for Brandon Belt. Got hit in the head last year multiple times with pitches. I mean, it's just, it seems to be just like a kind of comedy of errors when it comes to the injuries, and it's not his fault. So that's the frustrating part. Is some people tend to take those injuries and kind of hold it against him as a, oh, you're not a strong player, and it's, you know, a lot of them are completely unavoidable. And there's not a whole lot that they could do about the situation. So, you know, Belt's polarizing, but his defense is rock solid. You know, if he, goodness, you look at that, he has 450 plate appearances last year, and he hit 14 homers, had 46 RBI. You know, it always seems like he gets hot and then he gets hurt and he comes back and then he's not the same. So we'll see what happens with Belt, if he can, you know, kind of stay healthier. I still don't think he's got, I have never thought he's got 150 games in him. And with Buster Posey I assume he's probably going to get, I'd say, three quarters of the time behind the plate and a quarter of his games over at first. And that's going to be the primary move there. So, you know, Belt's intriguing. If they want to try and move the contract, I think that's the thing that has been kind of, you know, a talk this offseason, that the Giants have at least kind of shopped it or tried to see if there was a match somewhere. Maybe not for now, maybe for later. But, you know, Belt is who he is. He's a solid first baseman. You know, I'd rather be paying him what they're paying him than what the Padres are paying Eric.
Yep.
Cosmer, or, you know, something along those lines. So, you know, I think the problem is that there's a system. So if you trade it, you know, you're not alleviating, you know, a top 100 first base prospect. You're just opening up to a weirder platoon of Ryder Jones and Pablo Sandoval at first base and third base. So, you know, I don't think that's the most competitive option for the Giants at this point. So we'll see what happens with Belt, but, you know, he's the first baseman. He's pretty set. He's going to be solid. He may not be great, but, you know, the numbers over the years have shown that Brandon Belt is still, you know, a top 10, top 15 first baseman in the league when he's healthy. So, you know, I don't think the Giants are, you know, killing themselves there. And also, thankfully, you know, to how they kind of structured out the contract, you know, they may be paying him $16 million, but that front office has so much money that really they're just worried about the luxury tax and the way that the deal is balanced out. Because of them buying out his remaining years of arbitration with that, I think it's only like a $10 or $12 million hit to their actual luxury tax numbers. So, you know, I think that's a positive for them. So, that, you know, the Giants front office probably looks at that a little bit more than they do the fact that they're paying him $17 million this year.
Yeah, we're gonna slide over to second base. Disappointing year for one of the guys in baseball that I absolutely love watching. Guy's only 2 years removed from a gold glove at second base. Joe Panik was a negative WAR player this year. Not exactly what the Giants were hoping for, I'm sure. What's the future with him? He's 28 years old. Seems like he's going to be in the system for at least the organization for at least a while. Is there a plan around him or behind him, or is it Joe Panik until he goes, basically?
Yeah, well, I think the Giants have actually been trying to trade him, and I think that's probably the more likely outcome than them even signing him to an extension. You know, they went really hard after DJ LeMahieu. They were trying to get something more solid at that position. You know, he's only going to be making, is I think the number that he's in at is 3.38 this year.
And he's got another year of arb.
Yeah, so I mean, still cheap. but his value is starting to dwindle. So we'll see what they do. I think that if there's anyone on the big league roster, and I kind of said it going into the offseason, I still believe it, the most likely to be traded player off this Giants big league roster is actually Joe Panik, I think, just because there's a lot of teams that like that could use a guy that can that needs a change of scenery. You know, there's teams that have a hole at second base. You know, he is still a solid defender. His numbers defensively weren't bad last year. It was really weird. I was looking at his leverage, what he does in high and low leverage counts, because he always seemed to be like a lot of big. And it's like, oh, great, here comes Joe Panik touting his, you know, 240 average. And actually, he had a far superior average in high and mid-leverage situations. But when it came to, like, low-leverage situations, it was his batting average was significantly lower. So, you know, he's a guy who's going to put the ball in play a lot, though. You only 56 times, you know, he either walked or struck out, and that was it. So, you know, Panik's a guy who puts the ball in play. He gets guys moving. He's a really solid defender, and he's a good clubhouse guy. So I think some teams will find some value in him, and I think the Giants themselves will find some value in him. You know, if they decide to hang on to him, it won't be a terrible thing. But, you know, like I said, I think Joe Panik's probably the more likely guy to be traded off this roster. You know, Alan Hansen behind him was real good last year in spurts and in more limited time. The versatility that he brings is something that kind of like Farhan Zaidi. I mean, if you watch the Dodgers, anybody who's paid attention to the Dodgers the last few years, I mean, he values that versatility all over the place. And Alan Hansen kind of fits that profile. He's only 25. He was a former top 100 prospect, kind of dropped really heavily, and then was a free agent, you know, a minor league free agent pickup for the Giants last year, and came up and did pretty well. So, you know, I think they like what they have there. They like a couple of their minor league options. They don't have anybody like quite ready for that role. But they've got some guys that they could lean on. And, you know, I think that position actually kind of has a little bit more coming in the free agency market the next couple of years. So I think they'll kind of let that one play out. But we'll see what happens. And maybe if they trade him, and let's say they trade Bumgarner, you know, maybe they go and get the replacement for Panik in that kind of a way. But, you know, if he has a bounce back here, he might stick around. But like I said, I think Panik's the kind of guy that it's pretty likely to get shipped off if there is going to be anyone on this roster that gets shipped away.
Because I feel like some teams in baseball would definitely value him. There's nothing more valuable in baseball than versatility. And Panik does seem to have that, in my opinion, at least. Does this team purposely collect people that Red Sox fans hate at third base?
That's okay. I don't know. I guess so. I didn't know Red Sox fans had such a disdain for Evan Longoria, though.
Oh my gosh, he tore us up forever, man. Like, Evan Longoria was a Red Sox murderer. But Pablo Sandoval did something way worse. He tricked us into thinking that he was a good baseball player, grabbed him, signed him, sent him back to y'all, and all of a sudden he remembers how to play baseball again.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just the magic at the in the city by the bay. No, yeah, I mean, Pablo's a whole lot of fun. I was very skeptical of him coming back, but he's kind of been a pleasant surprise. But I also understand, because I've been there with guys that we've signed, and I'm like, man, they're on the other team. Like, I can't wait to hate on them. So I get it. I get the hate from Red Sox Nation as well.
Yeah, he was part of that big offseason too. Evan Longoria, we're talking about big deals, you know, with Pablo Sandoval's Red Sox deal. This Evan Longoria deal is massive. Massive. Of course, this is a guy that was acquired in a trade from Tampa Bay. You know, Rays fans thought he would be a Ray lifer. Didn't turn out to be that way. What's the feel with Evan? I mean, I know he ended last year on an injury. What do Giants fans expect from him in 2019?
Yeah, I mean, we'd like to see more of the same, because he was on pace for 20 homers if he didn't have his hand broken. They threw inside on him in the Miami when we were down in Miami. And it was like, it's funny, because I think the Giants last year played one game where everybody on their team was healthy, and it was Madison Bumgarner's like first game back when he was in Miami. And then after that, Evan Longoria, like the next afternoon, like broke his hand on a hit by pitch. So, you know, he was on pace for 20 homers. The Giants haven't had a 20 homer guy. He's what you expect, though, from Evan Longoria. Strikes out a ton, doesn't really get on base a ton outside of when he hits. But, you know, the Giants honestly don't need another on base percentage guy. They had, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys that had at least over a 300 on base percentage. You know, they got to have someone who can knock them in. When Longoria was in the roster or in the lineup, and when he was going, whenever they had still had McCutchen, they kind of hadn't given up on the 2018 season. That offense kind of clicked a little bit. He struck out a lot. Like I said, I mean, he 101 strikeouts, but the strikeout numbers have been going up all over baseball. So I don't think the 101 is all that concerning anymore. But, you know, Longoria is a guy. Giants hope Giants fans genuinely hope they get 20 homers out of him. And if he knocks in a bunch of runs as well, that's fine. But they don't have a guy on this roster that is like the guy that's going to bring everybody home. Brandon Belt can hit homers, but they've tried him out in the 3-4-5 spot, and he's never been 100% consistent and reliable there. Brandon Crawford should never really be hit above a 6, even though he hit 14 homers last year too. So, you know, Evan Longoria is that guy that you could, you know, there's a good amount of rosters in this league that he'd still be a 3-4-5 hitter for. Probably not a lot of good ones, but he still could be that kind of guy for a decent amount of teams. And he is only 32. You know, I think the value and whatever, you know, the money that was given headed their direction, it's fine, because they really don't have a true third baseman in the minor league system that like is relatively exciting outside of Jacob Gonzalez. And after his first year last year, you know, he seems like he's a little bit farther behind. So, you know, maybe you know, 2 or 3, maybe even 4 years out for Jacob Gonzalez. So I think that's one of those things where you look at that and you're just like, I don't know about, you know, you can trade him fine, but you know, there's outside of Pablo Sandoval and, you know, a guy I mentioned earlier and goodness name, Ryder Jones. You know, there's not much else, you know, that they trade him. They're just kind of signing their death warrant on the 2019 season. And I think there's still, they'd like to make the fan base think that they're competing as long as they can.
Bright spot on this team is definitely Brandon Crawford with his defense. I mean, you could compare him as like the National League version of Anderson Simmons. I mean, if he's playing shortstop that day, he is something to watch because you never know what he's going to do. Love watching him play. Like you said, he hit 14 homers last year. I mean, with that defense, if you can hit 14 homers, I mean, you're valuable. What's he mean to this franchise? I know he's got a full no trade, so he's obviously not going anywhere unless he accepts it. Like, what does the organization seem to think about Brandon Crawford?
Yeah, he actually seems about like as much of a Giants lifer as Buster Posey is. I mean, he has been a part of this organization and been a fan of this organization since he was a little kid. I mean, he was born and raised in the Bay Area, born and raised a Giants fan. I mean, it's funny. There's a picture of him that goes around quite a lot in the Bay Area. Maybe not as much outside of it, but there's a picture of him on the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle back in the late 90s when the Giants were potentially moving to Tampa Bay. That was before the Rays were coming. It was going to be the Giants that were going to head out Tampa Bay because they couldn't get a hole. They couldn't, you know, the ownership was kind of a mess and they were trying to get a new stadium. And it was before AT&T Park. And there's a little picture of a very, very young Brandon Crawford with long hair sitting out there with a sign to keep the Giants in San Francisco. And that was on the front page of the Chronicle. So, I mean, Brandon Crawford and the Crawford family, they've been Giants lifers. And I 100% believe Brandon Crawford will be a Giants lifer. You know, I think he's a guy that, you know, as much as, you know, his contract is pretty team friendly. He's one of the, and his hitting may not be a Carlos Correa or a Francisco Lindor, but he's solid enough. He hit 254 this year, had a, you know, 719 OPS, at least above 700 OPS. He hit 14 homers. You know, he was creating some runs. So, you know, Crawford's been a guy whose bat never was really, and that was the hard part for a few years until about 2015. And since 2015, his bat has actually been really solid and kind of added a lot more value to him. So Crawford is a guy that, you know, we love. We'll keep him around. You know, we do have a really, really solid prospect in Marco Luciano that a lot of people out of the fallen or the instructional leagues going on in Arizona right now have been raving about, you know, what he's got in terms of just power and makeup. However, he is not, he doesn't seem destined to stay at shortstop. There's a possibility he could, but there's a lot of people that see him actually moving to the outfield at some point. There's not really a true like prospect behind Brandon Crawford, but you know, I think they don't really need one for three or four more years. So Crawford, man, he's the guy. And you know, outside, you look at the kind of the cornerstones of this team, it really is Madison Bumgarner, Buster Posey, and Brandon Crawford right now, because those are the guys that, you know, as much as Madison Bumgarner is brought up in trade talks, you know, he's still a cornerstone figure of the franchise. And I think if the Giants wanted to keep him around, they'd have no problem doing that.
Let's get to the depressing part before we get to talk about starting pitching. We have to talk about this outfield. It looks like a Triple-A team. Like, I don't even know what's going on out there. Like, if you asked a random person on the street, it was like, hey, name a San Francisco Giants outfielder, they would look at you and kind of look like you were crazy. It's definitely bare. What is the... is this a spot that they attack in free agency? Not attack necessarily, but go get basically fillers? Or do you let guys like Williamson and Slater play? And what does the opening day outfield look like as of right now?
You know, that's the hard part, because the Giants are very good at sending mixed signals until the very end. Farhan is very good at sending mixed signals until the end. Nobody knows whether they are in or out on Harper. Nobody knows. I think there's a lot of people that think that Marwin Gonzalez might be a possibility.
Perfect.
There's certainly a lot of people too that want Marwin Gonzalez in on the Giants, especially just general media. You know, our blog has written about it multiple times. Marwin Gonzalez would be a perfect fit. They can play him in left field. They can allow Chris Shaw to kind of get some time too. Can also play him at second base. Marwin would be solid. I think they'll end up grabbing one outfielder out of this current free agent class. I know a lot of them are signed at the moment, but out of the ones left, I think they'll end up with one of them. And you know, Carlos Gonzalez, I think, is kind of a dark horse option there, because I opening day roster, you know, it very well could have Austin Slater and Mac Williamson and Steven Duggar out there, but I think there's probably a better chance that they'll have some kind of free agent into that spot. Who it is, no clue at the moment, but you know, that opening day outfield, I think the one position that I think is pretty easily locked in is Steven Duggar in center field. He showed his defensive ability all throughout last year when they called him up, optioned Austin Jackson and then immediately brought him up. And Duggar's, you know, average, he hit .255, got on base to .303. He's really fast. He can steal bases. He can get on and caused a lot of problems on the base paths. You know, he only had 11 doubles in his 150 at bats. So he's good at hitting the gaps and going fast. Duggar's going to be the defense from him, I think, is one of those guys. Like, I mean, I'm sure you're as a Red Sox guy, you're familiar with it. I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr., not the most prolific offensive guy, but his center field defense is so stinking valuable to what the Red Sox do that, you know, you can kind of afford to have him in the lineup. And I think that's Steven Duggar, is that if his bat never comes around, his glove and his defensive ability and his arm in center field is going to keep him on the field no matter what. So I think Steven Duggar is pretty much a lock at center field. But the question of what happens between Austin Slater and Mac Williamson and a potential free agent outfielder. That's all a toss up. But, you know, Mac was solid until he got a concussion last year, hit a couple of monster home runs, absolutely mammoth home runs. There was one he hit to right center of AT&T Park. And I genuinely, like, the only person I've ever seen hit a ball up there was Barry Bonds. And this guy did it as a right-hander. So Mac Williamson has mad power if he can keep his swing consistent and if he can keep his head about him. I think that was the hardest thing, is that when he did come back from the concussion symptoms and came back and was feeling good, he struggled a bit and kind of lost his way, and he had changed his swing in the offseason, and it was really successful until he got the concussion, and then he kind of lost it when he came back. You know, if he comes into this year and can keep his head on straight and kind of keep trucking forward and shows well, as Mac Williamson could be one of those odd, if there's any, like, I think we make a lot of comparisons to the Dodgers now because we have Farhan in the front office. But if there's anybody who I would put money on to have a Max Muncy, like, random, like, 30 homer year, probably be like Mac Williamson, just because of the power that he has. And if, like I said, if he can find some level of consistency, Mac could be a very serious power outfield threat. Austin Slater, on the other hand, you just got to hope he hits for a high average and gets on base if you're going to see something productive out of him.
You know, when you talked about Duggar, Dave's not here today. And Dave has this saying that he always says: on a baseball field, you can sacrifice offensively at two positions. You can sacrifice in a catcher, and you can sacrifice at center field, because there's two positions defensively that you basically allow yourself to have guys out there because they add so much value, whether it be Byron Buxton, Jackie Bradley Jr., Duggar, Kiermaier. It just goes all the way around. Aaron Hicks in New York. But you don't have to sacrifice offensively at catcher on this team. So you can definitely afford Duggar out there, you know, playing excellent defense. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And Duggar was a guy that we were hoping would make the team last year. And they gave the spot to Gorkys Hernandez. Everybody was mad until Gorkys hit 16 home runs and surprised the crap out of everybody. 15 home runs. Nobody expected that out of Gorkys Hernandez. And he was actually pretty solid. Defensively, he's never been bad defensively, he's just never been good offensively, and you got for the most of the season a good offensive Gorkys Hernandez. But Duggar kind of profiles, if his bat ever does come around, he does profile more as your typical leadoff guy, or your more classical leadoff guy, someone who gets on base a lot, is fast, can steal bases and stuff like that.
Sounds like Jackie so much.
Yeah, and you know, I really think, like, he's just a lot of, he's very interesting. I mean, he is a very unheard of name, but I think defensively, as long as he stays healthy, last year broke his collarbone on a weird slide. Giants have had some terrible injuries, which is why they changed up a lot of strength and conditioning coaches, and they got rid of some of those guys because there's just too many injuries and stuff like that people didn't come back from because they weren't rehabbed properly, or just injuries that shouldn't be happening. So Duggar, when he gets his full year under him in center field, I think a lot, he won't become a household name necessarily, but he's going to be a kind of guy that you think of in that conversation defensively with a Jackie Bradley, with a Kiermaier, with a Kevin Pillar, even. You know, that those kind of guys are defensively are just, they everybody knows what's coming. You hit the ball to them, it's kind of, all right, there you go, he's gonna catch it. And that's just kind of how you feel with Duggar. That's how the organization and a lot of scouts around him have always felt with Duggar. The question was ever, would his bat be good enough to make it to the big leagues? So his bat wouldn't matter in the big leagues at that point. But, his bat has been. And, you know, I think like you said, the Giants don't have to sacrifice at catcher. I think the next place that a lot of teams sometimes sacrifice at is at second base, right, when it comes to the offense side. And the Giants kind of sacrifice there a little bit, but when Joe Panik is going, they don't. So you can really afford to sacrifice in center field. And so Duggar's going to be a lot of fun.
So you have this stud out there, in the minor leagues, Heliot Ramos, first round pick. What is he going to be? I mean, he seems like he's just dominating wherever he's been.
It's interesting. The power numbers were 11 homers, 24 doubles, 8 triples down in Sally League, which is the Giants' high or regular A squad. You know, he is super fast. He'll probably be a center fielder, would be a incredibly good defensive corner infielder, but can play in center as well. If Duggar is just too good to not put in center, then they can easily put Ramos somewhere else. Like, is it insanely fast? He's got mad power. The question is the hit tool going to be there consistently for average? He just ended the 2018 season as an 18-year-old, so he'll be 19 for 2019. So he's really young. He was only 17 when they drafted. Was the youngest player in the draft, actually. And he's got mad power. When he gets going, you'll definitely see. I mean, this guy has he has the Acuna type potential, I think. Maybe not that young, ready to go. You know, Ramos is kind of an all out outfielder. I mean, this guy has been, this is the outfielder that the Giants have been waiting for within their prospect or within their farm system. So, good things from him in his first rookie season. You'd like to see the numbers, you know, the on-base percentage and the average go up a little bit, and maybe see him tap into that that stolen base speed soon. But man, the MLB pipeline thing says, you know, he's got the highest ceiling of any Giants prospect since Posey, and that's pretty much it. I mean, Ramos, if he gets up to the big leagues, and you know, if he makes it and all goes well, he has the potential to be something absolutely special in the outfield. So everyone's high on him. You know, you'll see him shoot up the top 100 prospect list. The more experience, the more he advances through the system. But he's a very, very good and a very good hitter, and has just a ton of power. So he's got a lot of things going for him that the Giants and most certainly the fan base are really excited for. Actually, a lot of people are really looking forward to going to see San Jose, which is their high A team next season, because they will have Helio Ramos and Joey Bart you know, a couple of their big draft pick pitchers that they really liked from last year, and Sean Hill, or I don't know how to say his name correctly. So Sean Hill or Hell or however you want to say it. And Jake Wong, who did really well for them in their in the Northwest League. So that Sacramento or not Sacramento team, but the San Jose team is going to be the one to watch for the minor leagues next year, because there's going to be a ton of talent on that team.
All right. So there's about $40 million invested into two people on this payroll and starting rotation that aren't named Madison Bumgarner. It's Johnny Cueto and Jeff Samardzija, two guys that look like when they were put together as this, you know, trio, that they were expected to make more than a couple playoff runs, and it never seemed to suffice at that point. Are these two guys that you try to trade? I mean, Samardzija has a modified no trade, and I don't think anybody would take that one. But the one that I think people would take even less is Johnny Cueto. I mean, he doesn't have a no trade, but he's under contract till 2022. Only 2021 once the club declines his club option.
Yeah, Cueto's contract is rough. The problem is both of them, you can justify it at the time that the contract was made.
Oh, the market.
Yeah, and it's 100% justifiable. Jeff Samardzija had a ton of innings left on his arm and his shoulder. I am not surprised that Samardzija struggled last year, because if you remember his time with the A's, Kurt Young was the pitching coach then and is now the Giants pitching coach. So that's kind of interesting. Kurt Young kind of tends to do well with younger pitchers. You know, Sonny Gray was someone that he worked with a lot. When Sonny Gray was first coming through and was good, once they got rid of him, Sonny Gray had some issues. started to have issues there. You saw the young pitchers on the Giants squad last year. We're really, really good. And Derek Rodriguez and a couple guys. And, you know, I think it's hard to see. Like, obviously, Johnny Cueto doesn't factor into the picture this year just because of the Tommy John surgery. So he is out for 2019 and will not return. You know, Jeff Samardzija, nobody knows what the heck we're going to get with him. So both of them are pretty much untradeable right now. You know, you could maybe make a case for Samardzija in a salary dump kind of a thing. Samardzija's contract, I believe, is up next year. Yes. So yeah. Next year will be his final year. I think Samardzija is probably a better trade candidate for a team than Giants could do, you know, one of Farhan's patented salary dumps that he did multiple times with the Dodgers, doing it with Adrian Gonzalez, did it with Matt Kemp, did it with all those kind of things. I mean, he does a really good job of that. I wouldn't be surprised if they try and use Samardzija's 2020 final year as a way to do that, or, you know, pitch in some money. You know, say you pitch in $10 million and you end up with you know, a halfway decent player. You know, you get out of it. You know, there's only so much left on that contract. You know, that I think it would be a good option to trade him then. And I think you might find some suitors then, especially if he has a good 2019. But yeah, two really tough contracts that I think a lot of people were kind of sitting there looking at it like, well, they'll be able to, you know, if they compete over those years, it'll be fine. They can sign Madison Bumgarner to the contract, you know, when he's up, or, you know, before his final year. That way you're not paying both him and some, you'd only have like 1 year of paying him and Samardzija a crap ton of money. And that's obviously not the case this moment. So now you're looking at what's going to happen. And maybe in large part due to the Samardzija contract, which at the time was 100% justifiable. As I said earlier, and, you know, you agreed with, so, you know, I think that's the hard part with this contract. I think Samardzija is just is the big question mark. Do they try and put him in the bullpen? Do they use him? You know, what can he even do? It's going to be really interesting to see how that kind of plays out this spring. I think at that point you'll really kind of get a chance to see what Samardzija's value is after the spring and maybe a couple of months of the season.
Does Madison Bumgarner finish the season with the San Francisco Giants?
That's a hard thing. If I were to give you an answer now, I say no, just because I don't think they're going to be very competitive. And I think it's going to be one of those of like, okay, Madison's having a very good year. We can get a lot for it. He'll be available in free agency. Let's trade him. So that's the interesting. That's the interesting one there. I think, though, if they're remotely close to 500 and even remotely competitive, I think they hang on to him through this year, at least. So I think it just kind of depends on where they're at. If they're in seller mode by the time June hits, then I think he ends up going somewhere else. But if they're in contention, it'd be stupid to trade away Madison Bumgarner if you're contending. And the NL West honestly looks pretty weak outside of the Dodgers. The Padres are up and coming, but the problem is all of their up and coming is still really about 2 or 3 years away. They don't look like they're ready to be what everyone thinks they could potentially be in 2019.
That franchise is kind of built around Fernando Tatis at this point. Once Fernando comes up and everything seems to fall into place, those pitchers start coming through. But the window for the Giants is right now. Like, if you want to take advantage and you want to be the Braves of last year, this is the year. Because the only good team in that division, I mean, I think we're going to see Colorado fall apart. Not fall apart, but be like a 70-84 win team. Won't be a playoff team at that point. And, I mean, there's just a window. The Diamondbacks are going to be bad. The Padres aren't going to be great this year. There's room there. So I can see where they think the contention window is there.
Yeah, and I think that's the hard part is that, you know, I think for, you know, fans like, and people like me who kind of, you know, we at FanSided, we did a whole massive offseason simulation, and I put as close together of a budget and a working budget as I could. I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot to make this team competitive. I really don't think. And you know, if they choose to upgrade somebody in the outfield, let's just say they do get Bryce Harper. I think that team, Giants put Bryce Harper on this team, I think they're the second best team in the National League West. So it's one of those things of like, man, we could sit here and we could say, oh man, you know, it doesn't look great, but it takes like one or two things for this team. I think they could actually be pretty good because that pitching staff is young. And they, outside of Samardzija, and Samardzija doesn't seem to be like a massive part of that pitching staff right now anyway. So, you know, there, that's the, you have a Madison Bumgarner, then a solid young staff. That's really the only big question mark is the young staff, with the amount of, you know, at least you know what you're going to get from them veterans elsewhere. So I know we get talking about big picture there, but you know, I think that's the hard part is that the window of contention is just there. And if they, you know, I don't think they're going to push hard for Bryce Harper. That's not the indication that I've gotten. But let's say they do land Bryce Harper. They're going to be in contention if they have Bryce Harper on that team. So that's the hard part. And that's the question mark of what do you do with Madison Bumgarner? It is interesting to hear the back and forth. You know, you have Marcy come out and say, oh, this is okay. There have been some more advanced trade talks between the Giants and the Brewers. But, you know, Farhan comes out and goes, okay, you know, they called us to talk about this. You know, we're not actively going out and calling people to talk about this right
now. Yeah, I had a Brewers guy from The Athletic tell me that trade's not going to happen. They're just too far apart.
Yeah, and I think so. And I think the Giant problem is, too, I think the Brewers overvalue a lot of what they have.
Think Corbin Burnes is an ace.
Yeah.
Like right now.
I did a draft profile on Corbin Burnes, and I freaking love the guy. I think he's a really good number two or three.
Would you stop?
I think he's a really solid pitcher. Same with Brandon Woodruff, but you know, I don't think they're anything to like. You're getting Madison Bumgarner. Like, don't be stupid here. His velocity's down. His numbers, and he's old, and all.
Get him
like,
to October.
I know, right? And it to me, I just sit there and I'm like, okay, these are Brewers fans, you know, I'm not surprised. You know, they haven't been there. They haven't been in that moment, that the Giants have. I think at the moment they're kind of overvaluing what they got. However, I do think, like you said, I think they are just too far apart on it. So, you know, unless Madison Bumgarner comes in and is wowing everybody or someone gets really, really desperate, I really don't see them moving them. You know, I actually thought he would actually command something close to what Paxton commanded. And I think, I don't know if the Giants want that. I don't think the Brewers can, like, actually give them that.
There's not very many organizations that can do that. I mean, the Yankee organization was pretty deep. I mean, unless you're going to send him somewhere like in Atlanta, which I think is actually a perfect spot for him, a team that desperately really needs an ace and has the farm to do it. Because I think if you make that trade, you wind up getting a guy like Austin Riley back, and all of a sudden, you know, you have your third baseman of the future.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, even the Phillies, you know, goodness, I got to pull up their prospects because I can't think of the guy off the top of my head.
You have guys like Boehm. You have.
Yeah, I loved Alec Boehm in draft, actually, because I am in I live in Kansas, in Kansas City area, and Alec Boehm played for Wichita State University, and I went out to go watch them. They did a home and home kind of a series with KU. Lawrence is only 30 minutes compared to 2 hours to Wichita. So I went up there and watched him. The kid's just ridiculous. So I loved Alec Boehm in the draft last year. I'd have been okay if they got him instead of Joey Bart. But I mean, let's say you trade Bumgarner and you land Alec Boehm. That's a pretty good. I'd take Alec Boehm any day. So not over Bumgarner per se, but if that's the reason why you're doing it, you know, Boehm's the kind of guy who does fill that you know, third baseman, corner outfield or corner infielder of the future. So it'll be interesting to see like what characters actually come out of the woodworks when it comes time to talk about trading him and even where the Giants are. But that's kind of been my stance all along, is that the Giants will wait to make a move until the season, because I guarantee you, if they sell off Madison Bumgarner, their season ticket numbers are going to drop a lot. And, you know, kind of the ticket sales and stuff like that. You know, they have Madison Bumgarner. They can sell hope for, you know, a good 3 or 4 months. You know, without Madison Bumgarner, they're not going to be able to sell the hope of even being a contender. So that's going to be the intriguing, at least right now. So that's going to be, you know, a business decision, and also I think a good decision by the Giants to really narrow it, make sure they're getting teams that are actually serious about dealing with for him. Because, you know, I think that when they're in the middle of the season, you really know what you need, and you're sitting there like, man, I really need this ace. Because, you know, Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, sophomore slump. Okay. So, you know, we'll see if teams are more likely to cough up something serious for it over the fall or over the summer.
So who fills out this rotation? Who are the other guys other than Samardzija and Bumgarner for now? Obviously you have a guy like Derek Rodriguez there. I mean, he's got baseball in his blood, let's be real here. His dad was pretty good. I mean, he was only probably, in my opinion, a top two catcher of all time, but
yeah, maybe top,
yeah, maybe I, yeah, maybe I the know. Best in my opinion, actually the best.
Yeah, well, Pudge was great growing up, but man, Derek Rodriguez was so surprising, because, you know, you pick him up and you're like, oh, it's Pudge's kid. Okay, he's trying to be a pitcher. They'll give him a shot. And then you saw what he was doing in the minors, and you're just like, holy crap, okay, this guy's actually kind of good. And you get him up to the big leagues, and he was good in his relief appearances. They kind of gave him some more long relief appearances, and they said, hey, we're going to stretch you out, and we're going to make you a starter. And you know, he was fantastic. He really was the second best rookie in the National League. He had a 2.81 ERA, in 19 starts. He threw 118 innings. Strikeout numbers aren't like crazy. He only struck out 89. But you know, the whip is really low. You know, he plays in a really pitcher friendly ballpark. You know, the peripherals on him aren't bad enough to where you're like, oh man, he really just got lucky playing at AT&T Park. He actually is really a solid pitcher. So I don't know if he has ace stuff. It'll be interesting to see. I think one of the biggest things for the pitching, the acquisition that nobody talked or maybe hasn't had a chance to talk to, is the Giants hired like the dude from Driveline to be their pitching like coordinator and working with them. And I'm really intrigued to see like the stuff that he does and how that helps some of these younger pitchers like Derek Rodriguez. And then the next two in Chris Stratton and Andrew Suarez. Chris Stratton's a little bit older. He actually had the most wins on the team last year, went 10-10, struck out. He struck out 112 in 154 innings. He was very interesting guy though, because he was either hot or cold. I mean, it was hit or miss. So, you know, you'd get, oh cool, wow, we got an 8-inning game out of Chris Stratton. He struck out 7. The next game, you know, he gives up 5 runs in the 4th inning, you know. So very hit or miss there. You know, I think if there's anyone who would technically be an odd man out in the rotation, if Jeff Samardzija fully comes back into the rotation, it would be Stratton, because Derek Holland that they re-signed, and he was extremely solid. Peripherals were even on him. He did a good job of being what they needed him to be, and he came in on a minor league contract, or it was a non-roster invite, $2 million. And was solid, was really, really good for them and earned a solid contract. And he's going to come back, and I think he'll be fine. He's only 31. And then on top of that, you've got Andrew Suarez, who was, he struggled early on, really came around towards the end of the season. I think, if you're looking at what I would consider the Giants starting five on opening day, you know, you'd go Bumgarner, Rodriguez, Holland, Suarez. And Samardzija, if you're going to look at the minor leagues, anyone that I'd point out would definitely be Sean Anderson, who you should be familiar with as a former Red Sox prospect. or maybe at least a little bit familiar with. But Anderson is their number three prospect. Since the Giants got him from the Red Sox, he's been awesome. Last year, struck out 127 and 141 innings. Over his both AA and AAA, had a 3.69 ERA. He is a very solid prospect. I think the Giants, he kind of the way he's moved through their system has really reminded me of how Andrew Suarez ended up moving through their system. And Suarez was not expected to contribute until the end of last season, and he ended up, you know, cementing his starter spot through spring training and the regular season. So, it's an interesting rotation there. They've got some depth. Tyler Beede, if he ever comes around, I don't think he's much ready though to be a starter, nor I really think he'll ever be a starter.
He got lit up in Sacramento.
Yeah. And even in San Francisco when he came and made a few appearances. So, you know, it was weird. He'd strike out as many as any innings as he'd throw, but the runs and the walks, he's just all over the place. But if there's anyone that's, you know, not already on the big league roster that you could potentially see in that rotation next year, Sean Anderson, kind of depending on what we see from him in spring training and stuff like that, I think he will give Giants fans and, you know, stuff like that a bit of a better idea for when he's going to be ready to contribute.
All right, so what we do when we get to the bullpen on the offseason preview shows and the, you know, kind of going through, you have Mark Melancon, and you also have the shell of Sam Dyson, but he kind of rebounded at some point during the year. What is the 7-8-9 on this team going to be like at the start of the season? Melancon, I would probably, considering the money and how actually good he is at his job, is going to be the closer. But who fills out the rest of the innings?
Yeah, actually, I think 7-8-9 is going to go Watts. It'll go Tony Watson, Mark Melancon, and Will Smith in that order. I think another person you could potentially swap for Mark Melancon, let's say if he kind of shows a little bit more of a return to level headedness, could be Ray Black. Ray Black has a booming fastball up to the hundreds, triple digits, and a really nasty cutter and a really deceiving changeup. So Black could be that kind of a guy to leap into that eighth inning role, maybe, or seventh inning, and you kind of move around Watson and Smith. That's just kind of if Melancon continues to have the same kind of struggles. Black's numbers don't look great if you're going to go look him up. He had a 6.17 ERA last year, but you know, he got blown up. Go look at his game log, and you'll kind of actually see what you're looking at. And because I believe in like his first or second one, he got tagged for like four earned runs or something like that right off the bat, and it kind of messed with him. After that, it was pretty even keel throughout what you saw from him, and it kind of ruined his ERA from the start there. But Black is a solid piece to that pen that you'll see a little bit more of next year, hopefully. So kind of keep an eye on him as someone who could maybe sneak into that 7-8-9 inning role. But really, Tony Watson, Mark Melancon, and Will Smith, I think are going to be the big ones that you see there, barring any trades, because Watson and Smith have been heavily linked for trade rumors for the Giants this offseason. So there's still a chance that they could go. We'll see what happens as the market continues to develop, slowly continues to develop. But yeah, that 7-8-9, you know, I don't think Mark Melancon's really set up to be the closer much anymore. He's blown it too much the last couple of years. But as an eighth inning guy, seventh inning guy, I think he's fine. But Tony Watson, and once he got to a point of overuse last year, it didn't go well. And he seemed a little tired out at one point. But Watson and Will Smith for sure are guys to see in the back end of that rotation. Will Smith had an incredible year last year coming off of his Tommy John surgery. So it'll be interesting to see that, see what he does again. And if he kind of builds on that, or if that's kind of the flat line. But Will Smith, man, had a hell of a year. That bullpen, I mean, go look at those bullpen ERA numbers. I mean, only one of them was sitting over three. That was Hunter Strickland, and he's no longer on the squad. So, these guys, they've got a solid bullpen. the problem is that I think if you're looking at the Giants overall, they didn't score enough runs. They're a terrible offensive team. Last year, we crunched some numbers on one of them, but I think, you know, their winning percentage goes from like 300% or like 30%. If they score less than four runs, but if they scored more than four runs, it went up to like 70%. Jesus. So, you know, this team can hold teams to three, four runs, four or five runs a game. The problem is did they score four or five runs a game? And oftentimes it wasn't enough, on the offensive side. So, this pitching staff, incredibly underrated, really young in a lot of room to improve. And I think some more projection to improve. So this pitching staff is really intriguing. And I think for the Giants, contention is really just a matter of whether or not they can score, you know, four or five runs a game or even six runs a game, you know, get into that a lot more. But, you know, it's just those winning percentages and the flip flops is just incredible, considering how good that rotation was. They still weren't able to, the rotation and the bullpen, that's the pitching staff overall, for the most part, when they just weren't able to scratch across enough runs.
What is it with Californian bullpens, man? I feel like every California team outside the Angels has just like this dominant bullpen or has a dominant name in there. I mean, the A's was unbelievable last year. And then you talk about yours and bring up those numbers. It's incredible.
Yeah. And the Dodgers have a solid bullpen too. You know, there's that
Blake West Parker kind of shine for the Angels.
Yeah. And I really think the Giants won a lot of their World Series on the strength of having a total and complete team. They scored a good amount of runs. Their pitching staff was incredible, and their defense was good, and they just didn't make mistakes. They didn't make mental errors. And that was why they were so good, because they could, every single place over the field, on the field, you know, every facet of the game, they could do it, and they could do it really well. And they, like I said, they didn't make mistakes. But, you know, the offense has been the one thing that's been killing the Giants the last couple of years. So, you know, that bullpen is incredible. I think some teams too have understood that, you know, I think even Dombrowski is interesting. Dombrowski never cared to put together a bullpen when he was in Detroit. But man, once he got to Boston, he was like, okay, I'm going to put together a bullpen, and he goes and wins a freaking ring for it. So unfortunately, you know, that's like, the Giants are like on the back end of the recipe, right? Like a lot of the good teams, okay, they have the offense, they have a decent rotation, or at least a decent front two, but the back end of the rotation isn't very solid, and their bullpen is kind of average. So then you sit there and like, okay, then they need to go get the bullpen. But the Giants are like backwards. They've got the bullpen down, mostly got the defense down. They got the starting rotation down. They don't have the offense down. So
Vegas has this team sitting at 73 wins on the over-under. Do you think they win more than 73 games this year?
Yeah, because I think this team is going to end up being better than last year's, just because of, you know, I hope, knock on wood, you know, health is such a fickle thing. I believe they were at like 73 last year, 73 or 75. Last year, I am terrible with win totals. Oh, I could look and scroll up. Oh, gee, yeah, they're exactly at 73. So they're at exactly 73 last year. I think this team, at time, you know, they were sitting at a 500 pace, straight on until guys and injuries went by the wayside, and at the end of the season, they were rolling out, you know, a lineup. They were rolling out Hunter Pence literally every single day. It was an outfield of Hunter Pence, Gorky Hernandez, and like Austin Slater. I mean, it wasn't going to do anything. So, you know, I don't think what they have in the outfield is much better. But at that same time, you also had no more Brandon Crawford, no more Brandon Belt, and no more Brandon Posey or Buster Posey. So I think this team is probably good for 80. I think 80 is a safe place to lock them at, because they're not like one of those middling teams of the, we're not competing, but we're not totally tanking. They're not last year's
Seattle,
Royals.
What they think they are every year, basically.
Yeah, or they're not the Royals, you know. They're not like, oh man, we think we could be around 75
wins.
And actually, they're at like 50 wins. You know, like that. The Giants aren't in that boat. They've got too much talent on the roster to be in that boat. But it's going to take a couple of serious free agent signings and maybe a trade to like actually make me consider this team being over 500 next year. But I think right around 80 wins is a good place to have him. Find me. Of course, thanks for listening, folks. And thanks for having me on.
No problem, man.
For sure. But, you know, you can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter is at SperryDaniel94. If you want to keep up with the Giants and all of our work on that, you can follow us at the A in around is actually the at symbol for the Twitter handle. So it's at roundthefoghorn.com or at roundthefoghorn. Yeah. And then if you're into soccer, I don't know how many people listen to a baseball podcast are into soccer, but, I cover sport in Kansas City cause I live in Kansas City. I cover sport in Kansas City for Major League Soccer, for their league website. If you're into soccer, you know, hit me up. I talk soccer all the time too. I have writing, on soccer elsewhere as well. You know, be ready if you follow me, you know, be ready for a smattering of soccer and baseball. But you want some nice Giants content on your Twitter feed, go ahead and go to at Round the Foghorn. And of course, come check out our website, aroundthefoghorn.com. We are part of the Fansided Network. We do our best to give you some solid in-depth, a nice mix of legitimate analytical breakdowns, and then a lot of just kind of fun content as well, because you've got to have a nice balance if you're going to be successful. So come check us out. But again, I'll stop with the shameless plugs, but for sure, thanks for having me on.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.